Behind Castle Street, at the end of Cathedral Street, is Glasgow Cathedral, which also has two other names. Head of Heritage Management at Historic Scotland, Ranald McInnes, takes us around this majestic building.
Okay, we're outside Glasgow Cathedral, St Mungo's Cathedral, or St Kentigan's Cathedral. It's three names, it's all the same building. The biggest, possibly one of the best, a great building, one of the finest in Europe, even in terms of its architecture, not that well known. But as you go round it, you'll see what I mean. The clarity, the size, the scale of the building is quite awesome, especially inside. At the moment, if we're standing at the west end, that's what would have been the main entrance to the cathedral. If we just, instead of focusing on the cathedral, turn round and look away from the doors and across the square that's been created in front of the cathedral, I want you to go way back hundreds of years to a time when this was full of houses, populated with lots of people, mostly connected with the cathedral. If you're looking straight across, your view would be blocked by the bishop's castle. Now, he, of course, is the most important person. He has a castle which is defensible and very grand looking. Looks like a Scottish tower house with a great crenellated, parapeted wall around it. So that's dominating the scene. And behind that, if it were possible to look past the Museum of Religion that was put up fairly recently to the Province Lordship. Now that's really the only survivor of a number of buildings that was in the Chanonry. The Chanonry is the collection of buildings grouped around the cathedral. You would be seeing in 1400 St Nicholas's Hospital, the Govan Manse, the Renfrew Manse. All the outlying churches had to have a manse within the Chanonry. So you're looking at quite a community, a large community, and with all the infrastructure, buying and selling, that would go on all around that. So like a little town in itself. And in fact, Glasgow, to some extent, was a city of two towns. So you had an upper town and a lower town. The typical thing was for a cathedral to develop along the lines of later on commercially around itself. Glasgow was a bit different. Its cathedral up on this lofty hill, and then down below nearer the River Clyde, the commercial city, the secular city, grew up. And between the two, of course, the University of Glasgow, the College of Glasgow, one of the finest buildings that really ever existed in Scotland. Up at the cathedral, you have this great collection of stone-built, very grand buildings, stone all locally quarried and looking very, very resplendent around the cathedral. We turn back to the west end. Let's look at the doors, these great, mighty doors. On either side of that, we see the twin towers of the cathedral. Now, every cathedral in Europe worth its salt really wanted to have twin towers. This was a great emblem of grandeur. Glasgow was no exception. But Glasgow's twin towers were quite exceptional because they didn't match. One was different from the other. One was square, the other more slender. And really that proved in the end these towers undoing. Because the great restorers, the reformers, the conservators of the 19th century didn't quite approve of these mismatched asymmetrical towers. The 19th century was an era of improvement in terms of heritage and conservation. So in order to improve the situation here, they demolished these towers, which were of great antiquity. And this was a huge calamity, really, as we look back on it. And they regularized and created these two symmetrical towers that we now see here. So they date only from the 1840s. That's unusual. The rest of the cathedral dates from the 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th century, even the 16th century. So typically for cathedrals, they're built over a very long time. Moving from the west end of the cathedral, we walk towards what is now the entrance to the building. As we do that, we're coming through the later church's graveyard, and we see some very fine 16th, 17th century graveyard monuments. Coming round to the entrance to the cathedral, We walk in. I hope, like me, you're surprised by the scale of the building you see before you. The nave is enormous, certainly one of the largest in the UK, not that much smaller than Westminster, taller than Westminster Abbey. But crucially and very differently, if you like, the east end of the church is on two levels. This is the most unusual thing. But before we go down there, if you're just turning around with your back to the doors we were looking at a moment ago, we're looking at now down the church towards the choir, and you see in front of you a carved screen, the pulpitum. That was to separate the nave from the choir, the laity, the ordinary members of the public, from the religious in the other part of the church, the choir. You can see how beautifully carved and decorated that is. So while you are in the nave is functioning as a kind of parish church, which is unusual. And beyond that, the religious observances taking place in the choir, choristers, the songs, the psalms, the word of God also being interpreted for you by the religious. If we walk towards the pulpitum, just admiring all the intricate sculpture of that object, down to the right, you'll see some steps taking you down to the Blackadder aisle. Now, this was planned, built, and erected by Bishop Blackadder. The Blackadder aisle, the end of the 15th, early 16th century. It took 25 years to build. And when you go down there, you'll probably see why that was. It's beautifully detailed. A real Renaissance wonder of sculpture and detailing. So always stonemasons, joiners, carpenters, plumbers, coming and going, continuing to embellish the cathedral. And then people from the town, in the church, meeting their friends. This was a place at the centre of the community. Now later on, of course, the lower town, the town that we now think of as being the centre of Glasgow, around Glasgow Cross, its importance rose and rose, especially after the Reformation, and the relative commercial or political importance of the cathedral waned. So it's almost as if the having come together as from two towns into one, it began to split apart again to some extent. We lost almost all of the chanonry buildings, all of the medieval cluster of buildings around this great cathedral. And what you see now outside of the cathedral is completely different to what would have existed even as late as the 16th century, 17th century. The area around it became rather separated. A lot of tenements built around about it. Not a very salubrious area. It was later cleared completely. And so really when we look at it, we're still seeing the results of all that clearance. Not many people would connect such a venerated and important religious place as Glasgow Cathedral with the Highland cateran Rob Roy, as depicted by Walter Scott. But there's an important event in Walter Scott's telling of that story which takes place in the Barony Church, which is the Laigh Church down below in this dark and spooky environment, where the protagonist hears some news to his advantage and he has to go and meet yet another protagonist at midnight, of course, at Glasgow Bridge. Now, Bishop Jocelyn is an important man in Scottish history. He was the fourth abbot of Melrose Abbey before he became Bishop of Glasgow in 1170. And he's thought of by most scholars as the founder of the Borough of Glasgow, so a very important position, and initiator of the Glasgow Fair, which is still the traditional Glasgow holiday period. So he's looked upon with great fondness by all the working people of Glasgow.